This is Emily Thomas, and you are listening to the Mom Struggling Well podcast. Ladies, welcome. Another week is upon us. It might just be because my show comes out on Mondays, but I feel like there are more Mondays than other days. I know that can't actually be a thing, but it really feels accurate. This is episode 123, and I am talking to my friend Stephanie Ackerman. Before we get started, though, I wanted to update you on the Wellness Revelation small groups that I'm leading. The closed group that started this January, I capped it so that we can make sure to have good connections with a smaller group of people. If you didn't get in, several of you contacted me wanting in. Do not despair. I'm opening registration for the next group on February 1st. The class will start in March. It's a 9-week long class that meets over the internet. We meet over a video call. Once a week, we read through a really, really good book called The Wellness Revelation. Plus, you have access to weekly video teachings that you only get if you go through it with an instructor, which is me. So the group that's currently going is having such a good time. It really is a great experience. So stay tuned on social media and all the other ways. You can get on the mailing list at my website, momstrugglingwell.com, and I'll make sure you know about the registration. And again, it opens on February 1st. All right, this week I am bringing to you my conversation with Stephanie Ackerman. Like I said, we have recently become friends, and I am consistently encouraged by her honesty and approachability. There really is something for everyone in this chat. We talked about divorce, depression, and anxiety, being creative, fear of praying out loud, when you have to push your kids to do something that they really don't want to do, but you know that it's what they need to do. All kinds of things got covered. You are going to love it. Let's jump right in. Hey, Stephanie, how are you today?
Good morning. So good to be here.
Yeah. Are you in California?
I am in California, Southern California, Orange County, California.
Yeah. I went to school in Fullerton.
Oh, I grew up in La Mirada. So
okay, that's awesome. Yeah, because I'm seeing that you're in your garage, and if I was in my garage, it would be so hot right now.
It's a little bit warm, but I'm wearing a sweatshirt because when it's like 72, it's like fall in California. So we're cold.
Yes, I love that. Okay, so will you please introduce yourself to everybody?
I am Stephanie Ackerman. I am a wife, a mom, a daughter, a creative soul. I get to do what I love for a living, and that is create stuff. I am self-employed, and I mean, that's it. I don't know how to explain myself.
It is a big question. So you definitely are creative. I was looking at some of the things you've done, and you've basically done everything. One of the things I loved was that you are literally a beauty school dropout. I love that.
For sure, but twice. When I blogged about it, I only said once, but I actually did attempt to go back again.
Okay.
And I dropped out again.
Okay, so what made you want to go, and then what made you keep stopping?
Well, I didn't know what I wanted to be when I grew up. And we had a few people in our family that did hair, and because I think it was creative and it just sounded fun to me. I don't think I necessarily ever wanted to do hair for a living, but I wanted to learn it. And so my first round, I started learning and I liked it, but then I was just a dumb young teenager and I dropped out. Okay. But then when I turned, I think I was like 21, and I was much smarter when I was 21.
That's when you learn everything. Yes.
Right. That's when I went back. And then I had a jaw surgery. And so I had to take some time off to recover, and I just never went back. But again, it wasn't anything that I ever wanted to do. I just wanted to learn the basics.
Okay.
So I was given perms, and I was cutting neighbor's hair, and I was coloring. So I was doing what I wanted to do. But I think you have to have a total of 1,900 hours, and I had about half, 800 hours.
And okay. And you were done.
I was done.
Well, I love your hair. You've got cute hair. Hair is something I don't understand, and the Lord gave me very tricky hair to deal with.
You have amazing hair. You know, it's always that you wish you had other people's hair. My sister's hair is beautiful and light brown and curly from the root. Mine is stick straight, thin, fine, but I have a lot of it. So I keep it short.
I love it. It's so cute. I wish I understood hair, but I can't stay interested long enough to actually do anything with it. So it's fine. All right. So you said you were a caterer and you served the Real OC Housewives.
Well, That was one of the jobs that I did when I was going through a divorce. I worked 100 different jobs so that I could stay home with my kids. And so on the weekends, I worked for a local staffing agent that would staff different parties. And really what would happen was the chef would go in and prepare food right in the home. And then us as staff would come in and serve and clean up and serve and clean up and serve and clean up. And yeah, I was right there.
What was that like to be, and we'll get to this, but you're a single mom, you know, trying so hard to just even make ends meet so you can prioritize what's most important, and you're going to these fantastical houses. I would have a hard time with that.
Just to stay neutral and be nice. Well, it was a job for me. Okay. I had to do it because I needed the money. I love serving. So for that part of it, that was fine for me. And I don't mean, I've never been a waitress, so I don't mean serving in that way, but I was doing something. So for me, it was right in my, I'm not going to say it was in my gifting zone to go and serve meals to people that were not super sweet and nice or appreciative, but I loved doing it. I did love going into the big homes to be able to see how people live. And it's not that I'm nosy, because I would want to go in and see how you live too. Yeah. But it was fun for a while. I will say that. It was exciting and fun for a while, but then it wasn't fun anymore.
Yeah.
I had to take myself out of that arena.
Okay.
Completely.
Yeah, because my family loves going to open houses of like just fantastic homes. And mm-hmm. I just, something in me is like, I don't want to see that. I want to think everybody is where I'm at. You know, I don't know. I just struggle with that. So
that's crazy you said that, because when we were growing up, we would do that too. My mom and dad and my sister and I, we would go up to Beverly Hills and go look in people's houses. And even growing up, my mom and our neighbor and us would go and knock on the doors of people that had the same model as us, so that my mom could see how they laid it out and how they placed their furniture. And so maybe that was just secretly, like I said, I'm not being nosy. I'm just always interested in seeing how people live.
No, I love that too. So you mentioned that all of your life you've struggled with a level of depression.
Right.
And that there was a lot of anxiety over someone dying if you were staying somewhere else. And
yes.
That, from what I understand, started when your mom suffered a miscarriage.
Yes.
And you were old enough to know something had
right.
happened.
Well, yeah, I was old enough to know there's a baby coming. And then, I mean, in their defense, they had never experienced that and they weren't sure how to address it. And so we just went for an over the weekend stay at my aunt's house so that they could do what they needed to do. And they just didn't know how to address it to small children. So
they didn't say anything? Is that
they didn't say anything. Yeah, they didn't say anything.
Did you ask?
No, I don't think we thought anything was wrong. But when we came back, they told us. And for some unknown reason, it just flipped a switch in my head that if I left or if they left, someone would die.
Yeah. And so that stayed throughout like your childhood.
Yep. For a long time, a long, long time into my early teens until they plopped me on a confirmation camp van bus and just gently but persistently forced me to go.
Yeah, to camp.
Yeah, to camp. And I came back. No one had died. And it was all over.
So you were glad they did that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Was some part of you glad they did that at the moment? Or
no.
Were you mad?
I was not mad. I don't want to say I had my hands on the window and I was screaming like, no, don't send me.
Yeah.
But that's kind of the feeling. And it's kind of crazy because I just had my 30th high school reunion. And the first person that I saw when I walked in was my pastor's daughter. And she wasn't even part of my high school class. She was a few years ahead of me. But the first thing she said to me was, remember when your mom and dad made you go to confirmation camp and you were crying? I'm like, yes, I recall that.
Kind of pivotal.
Yeah. Thank you for bringing that up.
It's good, though. Like,
but
loving our kids is hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes
yeah.
we have to do things they really hate for their good.
For their good. And so I understand that now, being a parent. And I understand that in God's way, too, of thinking, this is something. He's being a parent to us and not necessarily the things that we want to do, but he knows what's best. And
certainly,
we try to hold on to the door and not try to be shoved into the confirmation van.
Okay, so as you've gotten older, you've mentioned that anxiety has gotten worse with hormonal changes. And I have found the same thing for me. I'm actually currently going to like a natural doctor and doing all kinds of strange tests to see how we can get that sorted out. So I think it's tricky when something hormonal changes as we get older, because we're busy when we've got kids in the house and we're like not taking care as much of ourselves. I mean, we just have a lot. Our lives are full. So like, what did anxiety look like for you? And when did you notice, okay, something really has shifted? I'm not just making this up.
Well, it goes back so far. So there was always different situations where I knew that I was not dealing with things right, because I would panic or I would feel super anxious or off, but I didn't know exactly what it was when I was younger. So as I grew older and started to be more wise to it, I was able to address it more, because for years it was just like, oh, here, take this medicine. Just take this. Oh, that doesn't work anymore. Okay, now take that and just take that. And then when that doesn't work anymore, let's change the dose and let's just do that. And that kind of was the pattern for many years.
Okay.
I also have a lot of food issues. So as I got older, then I started to look into it more in trying to identify, okay, what happens when I do this and I don't eat that, but I take this. And it's just been a constant learning curve. And it's just hard. I mean, I'll always go back to, it's just hard and it's always changing.
So what's working for you?
Right now, what's working for me is eating well, sleeping well, moving well, taking the medicine, praying, and a dash of essential oil here and there on my feet and behind my ears. And I'm not like this woo magic voodoo, you know, crazy medicine person, but hey, if it works, then it works. And I have found that if I stay aligned with eating and sleeping and moving and taking medicine, then it works. But I joke around that I had my transmission yanked a year ago, which means I had a hysterectomy.
Okay.
but I had a lot of issues in recovery. So in the recovery part, I missed the memo of, here, you need to take these hormones, because I was taking so many antibiotics to offset the issues I was having that 8 months into my recovery, I was very dysfunctional. I'm very emotional and I cry and I get depressed and I'm anxious. And so I was misfiring all over the place. And luckily I have the best doctor in the world. And I texted her because I have her personal number. And I said, here's what's happening. And she said, okay, we probably just need to change your hormones. And I said, what hormones? And she said, the ones that I prescribed you. And they were in my medicine cabinet, two full prescriptions, and missed the memo of having to take those. And so I was upside down, inside out, and backwards. And once I started taking those, and that's a whole nother thing too, because people are, you know, well, do you take them? Do you not? What do you take? How does that work? What about cancer? For me right now, I need to take them. And once I was back on them, I was good. I'm okay now.
Good. I love that what you said is like, it's gotten a lot more difficult as you've gotten older, but difficult does not mean impossible. And I think sometimes we equate the two and we just don't need to.
Well, and it would be very easy just to sit and cry and just be like, I can't do this. I don't know what to do. And this is very dysfunctional, but I have to be active in trying to figure out what a good balance is for me. And a good balance for me might be different for you.
Yeah.
But I think if we open up and we share different ideas or different thoughts or different things that might benefit us, then it's worth a try, especially with food too. I mean, this could be a whole different podcast on just the food and the hormones and the medications. And but it's a very, very, I forget how you say it, but it's a very fine line. It shifts and it's a mess. But again, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
You just have to really dedicate yourself to working on it.
Yeah, that's good. So, I mean, add to the anxiety and the depression. You were married for 10 years. You had two beautiful boys and then you were divorced. And that is never anybody's plan. It certainly wasn't my plan when it happened to me. And so for someone considering divorce, they think getting out is going to be so much better. Like the grass is so green over there. And so I would love for you to speak to someone who thinks that getting out of their marriage would definitely be the best choice and easier.
First of all, I will always say exhaust every effort, because you do not want to have regrets. You do not want to be 10 years past a divorce and be regretting, like, maybe I should have done this or maybe I should have done that. So exhaust every effort to work things out, to try and seek counseling. And the counseling part is important too. I would say now seek Christian counseling,
okay,
not just any counselor, because they're going to be by the book.
And your worldview changes everything, even if you don't think it is. So
yeah. So yeah, because it was a consideration to me. This was the biggest thing, was this is not my kids' choice. Yeah. This is not their fault. And so if I have to live with their dad until they're 18 or 19 and adults, then I'm going to do what I need to do to make it work for them. And that was my ultimate decision. And so 10 months into that final decision of I'm going to stick this out, I was so dysfunctional. So I was unhealthy, not unhealthy in a drug or alcohol induced way, but I was no good. I was not a good mom. I was not a good daughter. I was not a good friend. It just was not working. And I had to think, is it better to live like just in an unhealthy environment? Because we weren't yellers and screamers. We just coexisted in the same house. But I didn't want my kids to grow up thinking that was normal either. Yeah. So I had sought counsel from, of course, my parents. And I wasn't part of a church at that point. So it's not like I had a pastor that I could go to. I mean, we have pastor friends, but it's not like I didn't seek that. And I talked to our pediatrician about it. And he said, I don't promote divorce. It's not something that I'm going to ever recommend to anyone for any reason. But he said, they're younger now. It's better if they're younger than when they're teenagers, because when they are teenagers, you are going to be needed front and center. You can't have a bunch of trauma and drama going on in your life when they're teenagers. And my gosh, that is the absolute truth. Okay. Because I can see how what happens. I've seen it in other kids where when they're teenagers and they're trying to make dumb decisions and do dumb things, yeah, if the parents aren't stable and aligned and front and center for them and they're having their own drama, that's when things go awry.
Okay.
So I'm grateful for that advice.
Okay.
So it's between that and exhaust every effort, because you don't want to be having regrets of what could have been.
Yeah. So what would your encouragement be to a single mom right now who's found herself in the middle of it and she's just really struggling?
My biggest prayer or thought or suggestion is to remember you are never alone. And that's where I took a big fall, is when my kids were not with me, I would roll up into a ball and I would stay that way until they came back, because I felt like my worth was completely attached to just them. And when they would go for dinner on Tuesdays and Thursdays and away with their dad every other weekend, I would just fall apart and feel like I was alone. And not that alone where, I mean, I have a supportive family and a supportive group of friends, so it's not that kind of alone. It was a whole different alone. But I would just roll up, put a blanket on, stay in the dark, and cry until they came back. And then I was back up to what I needed to do. And it wasn't until a friend just randomly reminded me, you are never alone. You're never alone. Jesus is right there with you. But I forgot to remember that. And that's something I knew. I grew up kind of knowing that in a way. I mean, that's part of my story too, about growing up in church. But I didn't realize that, or I forgot to remember. That's one of my biggest things, is when you are in a situation like that, or any dark, hard situation, you have to have people around you to remind you of what you forget to remember.
Yeah.
Because we just get into these cycles of darkness or quick fastness or, you know, just, yeah. I call it a whirling dervish. You're going so fast, so you don't know, you forget to remember what you know. So you have to have people around you to remind you.
Yeah, we are definitely created to be in community, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey guys, let me stop for a second to tell you about PrepDish. It is the new year. We all would probably like to do better regarding food. I know that I would. PrepDish is a healthy subscription-based meal planning service. I personally use it. I get an email each week with the grocery list and the prep instructions. After about 2 to 3 hours prepping in the kitchen, which I kind of secretly love because I just put on music and everybody leaves me alone, my meals are mostly made for the whole week. And it might sound silly, but I feel so proud of myself when my fridge is full of healthy meals and when my kids ask me what's for dinner and I actually know, I want to give myself a medal. Another thing I love is that the meals are gluten-free and paleo, so I know that they are whole foods based, and we are not paleo or gluten-free, but my family still loves it, especially because they do not know that it is paleo and gluten-free. It's my little secret that they're being healthy. So a gift for you guys from Allison, the founder, is that she's giving you 2-week trial for free. So head over to prepdish.com/MSW for a 2-week free trial. That's prepdish.com/MSW. Okay, so what was it like then? You said you made the choice to stay home with your kids as a single mom. I know for me, I'm motivated by fear a lot. And so if that situation ever happened, like my husband is alive and well, we have a great marriage, and I'm still thinking about what job will I get when he dies? It just doesn't make any sense. And so I would want to go get a job like that day.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you come to the point of saying, I really just want to stay home with my kids?
Well, because that whole, I don't know what I want to do for a living thing. I ended up working in office after office, cubicle after cubicle. I felt like I did a good job, but it was not my gifting at all. And it was hard for me. Like, I knew I wanted to have kids. I knew I wanted to work, but I had never like kind of thought about those things together. And for me, I know it's different for everyone. And I do not mean to offend anyone in any way by saying this, but I had the worst time dropping my kids off at daycare. Like, and I loved where they were. I just knew where they were. They were being loved on and taken care of. And they loved being there too. But I hated closing that door behind me and going off to work. Then going headfirst into this divorce, I had to make a gigantic leap of faith and make the commitment that I'm going to have to do whatever I have to do to be able to stay home with my kids. And it became a lot more evident when Jack was in kindergarten, and at the end of their half day, whether it was in the morning or the afternoon, they would either go in a home line or they would go in the after school care line. And he would go in the after school care line because I was working. And he said to me, Mom, when do I get to be in the home line?
Oh.
And I think I might have blocked that out a little bit because my mom just recently reminded me of, don't you remember when Jack wanted, just asked, when do I get to go in the home line? So between that, going into and through divorce, and knowing there was something else besides a cubicle to work at, it made me take a giant leap of faith of, I'm going to do what I need to do. I knew what my gifts were because I've always created, always, always, always throughout my whole life. People said, you should do this for a living. You should do that for a living. You should really do this. And I created this lie that I told myself for way too many years. And that is, if I had to do it, I wouldn't want to do it. I told myself that for years and years and years. If I had to make cakes for a living, I wouldn't want it. I wouldn't want to. Or if I had to paint Christmas ornaments, I wouldn't want to. And I believed it. I believed it 100%.
So then you got to a place where you didn't have a choice.
Nope.
And you decided you wanted to do it. And did you end up hating it?
No, absolutely not. It's the best thing. I mean, I get to say I do what I love for a living.
Yeah.
But I always say I build beautiful walls in front of me. Like I said, I should have a Better Homes and Garden book of walls because I build these walls and I stand behind them and I say, Emily, you should do that. You're so good at it, but I'm not going to. I'm just going to stay back here behind my wall and I'm just going to prevent myself from doing what I should do, but you should do it.
Uh-huh.
So I just... My gosh, I'm sure people think this or they'll say, yeah, me too. Like, why did it take me 35 years to realize that? Why did it take me 40 years to, why did it take me 48 years to realize what I should be doing? But we replay those tapes in our head or we think, no, we can't do that. Other people can. And I still go through it. I'm not going to lie. There's a lot of mini walls.
Well, yeah. And I think there's some self-doubt every time that we want to step out and do a new thing that feels like the place we're supposed to be, but feels scary.
Well, and I don't know if it's, I guess it's doubt and fear. I just always think, no, not me. That's not for me. That's for other people to do. I don't know why I prevent myself from success. I think we're going against the grain of what God wants us to do. I mean, you know, the whole blessed to be a blessing, well, or the giving and receiving. I'm a great giver, like how I said about serving. I'll give, 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 but I'm a terrible receiver. And so I'm working on that because you can't be one without the other.
Yeah, because you want to give the other people the blessing of being a giver.
Yeah, you take it, but I'm just going to stay back here.
Yeah.
So when it came to doing what I needed to do, I remember this sense of empowerment where I was like, I'm going to do this. It was exhausting. I work harder still more than I did when I was in a cubicle.
But there's a passion behind it, you know?
Absolutely. And that's the fuel. I mean, there are times when I'm tired or I'm crying, getting on an airplane, like, I don't want to do this. I should just get a 9-to-5 job. I've said that a lot. Like, I should just get a regular job. But the benefits outweigh anything else because I was able to be home with my kids. I mean, and it was tight. And I had I had child support and I had support from my parents, but I pulled my weight. I've always been a hard worker. Mm-hmm. So there were times when I was making wedding cakes, and this was probably right before we were divorced, but I knew it was headed that way. But I'd have been like in one of those, I forget what they're called.
Baby carrier things.
Yes, like a baby Bjorn or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing wedding cakes, or I was cleaning the houses of the rich and famous, and had my kid with me, you know, toting him around and cleaning houses and catering parties and painting Christmas ornaments. I mean, it was just, it's hard. Life is hard. It's hard. You just have to come up to the fact that you're just going to have to work hard.
Yeah. So as someone watching other people who seem to know exactly what they want to do, they've got a pretty straight life plan, career plan. Did that do anything to you internally because you didn't really, quote unquote, fit the mold? What would you encourage to someone else who doesn't fit the mold?
First of all, you have to take a look at what you love and what you love doing and what you're good at. It's so hard because, yes, it invaded my space for a long time. Like I wish that I would have wanted to be a nurse. I wish that I would have wanted to have this giant life goal of what am I supposed to be when I grow up? Mm-hmm. Because like I've said, I knew I wanted to be a mom. I knew I wanted to be married and have a home and be the president of the PTA. That was what I knew. Those things I knew, but to be something for a living, instead of looking at what I already was, I thought I had to become something else. And I think that is a big missing link of what we don't teach our kids. You know, recently I just had my youngest one graduate from high school, and looking at a class of like 780 kids, maybe 50 or 80 of them out of 700 and however many knew what they wanted to do. But like when you're 18, you shouldn't know what you want to do for the rest of your life. When you're 38, you might not know what you want to do for the rest of your life. And there's so much pressure on what are you going to do that you forget to just being yourself.
Yeah.
And looking into what your purpose is and what your skills are and what you love to do and what you're good at.
Yeah.
And then taking those and using those to become something. And I kind of giggled a little bit because Ben, the one that just graduated, first he thought he wanted to be a fireman, and then he decided he wanted to be an entrepreneur.
Okay, I wonder where he got that from.
Oh, super. Emily, I didn't even think of that. I was just like, oh, okay, entrepreneur. What are you going to do for a living?
Because no.
My boy was voted senior class most likely to be president of a fraternity. Oh. So you can kind of know where that one's headed. So I was like, oh, okay, entrepreneur. I mean, honestly, even helping him register for his classes at the community college he's going to, I'm thinking, okay, well, they have an entrepreneur program.
Oh.
And then it dawned on me, well, dang it, I'm an entrepreneur.
That is like, so funny.
I think he wants to do something different than make stickers and cute things.
Imagine that. You guys, maybe it's just me, but I'm really bad about taking care of my skin. I have so many people to take care of already. My skin isn't something I remember. Slowly, it's starting to become normal, though, that I'm caring for my body through cleaner eating and activity and things. It just makes sense that skincare would follow. That's where Tula comes in. Tula is a line of probiotic and superfood skincare products. It just makes sense since I'm putting good stuff in my body that I should also be putting quality, healthy stuff on my skin, too. Tula is basically a healthy smoothie for your face. We all know that probiotics are good for our tummies, but did you know that they're great for your skin too? Probiotics are clinically proven to naturally strengthen the skin's defenses. And in addition to probiotics, Tula products also contain vitamin C, blueberry, and turmeric, which work to fight wrinkles, redness, and dehydration. I love how it smells. I love how it feels on my skin. I really enjoy knowing that I'm making a healthy choice for my skin. So you can go to Tula.com/MSW to try Tula probiotic skincare today. You will get 20% off and free shipping on your order with the promo code on top of the screen. So that's Tula, Tula.com/MSW, and then use the on-screen promo code for 20% off your Tula purchase and free shipping. That's Tula.com/MSW. So I love, though, that you, through different iterations and trying tons of stuff, you have created this great business, and I love it. I've actually taken your classes. Tell people what you do.
Okay. This is the hardest question that I always have to answer. Yeah. Oh, what do you do for a living? My kids have even said, Mom, what do we tell our teachers you do? So I make stuff. That's the easiest.
You do. So you do like classes, hand lettering.
Yeah. So the purpose is to teach people creative arts. So whether it's hand lettering, stamp carving, stitching, mixed media collage, it involves all of the creative arts.
And so you teach classes online.
I teach classes. I also design product that is manufactured. I license my art to be manufactured into product.
What is it made into? Like, where could people find it?
It's made into faith-based paper and scrapbooking art, a lot of Bible journaling, and just creative. See, this is where I get jumbled on trying to explain what it is I do for a living.
You need to work on your like 2-minute elevator pitch.
Yeah.
You're like, good luck.
That's a whole nother podcast, because the marketing part of me, I'm a terrible marketer. Terrible. Hey. It's not me. It's not in my blood. I want to market you. I want to share what you do, not what I do. And manufacturers are like, no, Stephanie, please don't say that. Like, don't buy mine. If you already have that one, just use that one. And here, I'm going to tell you what you can do with that one.
That's it's so just funny. They're like, no, stop it.
Don't say that.
Please. When I had an Etsy shop, I really did want to incorporate some hand lettering into the mixed media stuff that I did. And I loved your class. I learned a lot. I still just can't make my hands do the things your hands do, which is fine.
Okay. But, and that's where I will say your hands are not going to do what my hands do. Your hands are going to do what Emily's hands do. And that's the important. Now I will do a shameless plug right now and I'll practice my marketing.
Good practice.
That I have a book coming out in November.
Oh, I didn't know that. I love it.
Yes. And it's called Faith Journaling for the Inspired Artist, but there is a section in it about how important it is to use your own writing. And I gave a really great example. I have cards from when I turned one, from my mom and dad, my grandma, my Aunt Dottie. I have this great picture that I took of all these cards with all of their writing, like, we love you, mom and dad.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes, with love, Aunt Dottie. And when I look at that writing, it takes me right back to them.
You're right.
And it fills me with this amazing emotion of, that's my mom. That's my grandma. My grandma's not here anymore. My Aunt Dottie's not here anymore. But I can look at their writing and I can go right back to them in a second. So when
that's
I'm
such
teaching
a good point.
Bible journaling, or I'm teaching any kind of hand lettering, I am flattered and I want you to practice. And if practicing with my writing helps you develop your writing, then practice mine. But, you know, especially if it's in a Bible or if it's in a scrapbook, your kids are going to want to look through it and see your writing. Mm. It might look fun and fancy if it's in my writing, but it's me, not you. So, like, part of my teaching, see, this is where I get passionate about, take what I have, practice with it, become confident in your own writing, and then use your writing because it's important. Someone just said they looked through their grandfather's Bible and they had written, I think it was the grandfather's Bible, written things in the Bible, and just seeing his writing took them again right back to him.
Oh, it does. Yeah, I can picture my grandma's writing, my mom's writing. I can, my sisters, I know all of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get so overwhelmed with how good things look on Instagram and Pinterest and Facebook and all this beautiful writing. And we want to do it just like that, but that's not you.
Yeah, it's interesting because I look at their handwriting and it reminds me of them. And so I love it. I do not like my handwriting. And I'm always like, oh, figure it out, Emily Thomas. Make your hands work. So I love that you're saying that.
Yeah, it is you. We are our own worst critic of everything, not just our writing, but other people see it differently than we do. I was the type that when I was in high school, I would take notes and then I would go home and I would fold a paper to make a ruler and then I'd rewrite all my notes.
My goodness.
So that they looked perfect, but I never studied my notes.
Okay.
So my notes looked good. Same with scrapbooking. I would line everything up. I would use rulers. I would do all this printing and perfect placement. And it took 5 hours and $50 worth of product. And at the end of the day, I didn't even like that page.
Okay.
So I am trying with this book, trying to give people permission to just be yourself. Just create the way you create, not based on what someone posted on a social media stream and that you want it to be exactly like them. You have to be you in your creating.
So in your book, what if somebody would love to do something like that in their own way, like you're saying, but doesn't know how, like they wouldn't consider them an artist? Some of the hardest thing is to call yourself what you hope to be. So is this for the person who would call themselves not an artist?
Absolutely, because I run into that all the time. Still, I have friends that have texted me and said, I ordered your book and I'm not creative and I'm not an artist, but I ordered it because I did. And I'm like, okay, perfect, but you got to use it. And so I made this book kind of more of a workbook. So there's spots right in the book where you are going to do this right here, right now with me in this little spot in the book. We're going to practice together because I used to say that too. I still do sometimes. I'm not an artist. I'm not. I mean,
no
yes,
way.
But people relate being an artist or being creative to a paintbrush. Like, I think that's what they have in their mind at this really old paint spotted ball jar with all of these different sized paintbrushes. And they have this in their head that if I'm an artist, that's what I need to do. But my mom is an artist at Excel spreadsheets. I know people that are creative and an artist at home decorating or at cooking or at homemaking or throwing party. It doesn't have to be the margin of a Bible journal, or it doesn't have to be scrapbooking, or it doesn't have to be quilting. Creative and artistry is wider than, I mean, God is the creator. He created us. I feel like I'm trying to preach it, but we have to think about it that way, that, well, we were created to create because we were created by the creator and he didn't mess up anything.
True.
So therefore, We are, but we just have to figure out what it is that we're good at.
Yes.
It's not figure out either. It's right in front of us. That's the funny thing is when I started going to Saddleback, I'm like, oh, I'm going to find my purpose. And I was like on a scavenger hunt for, I'm going on a scavenger hunt to find my purpose and I'm going to figure out what I'm going to be. It was right in front of me. We're just looking in so many different ways. We don't stop long enough to just pay attention to what's right in front of you. And that was, that's the same thing for when I was younger. No, I don't want to do that. Whatever came naturally, I didn't pay attention to that.
Well, because, yeah, we think, can't everybody hand letter like that? No, no, they cannot.
Well, and I feel like I can teach you. It won't look exactly like mine, but it'll be yours. Yeah. And I feel like that's really part of my purpose is just reminding people of what they forgot to remember. And that is, let's pick up a pen and let's do this together.
That is your elevator pitch.
Oh,
for reals.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, because everybody wants to know that what's going on with them matters and is worth it. Your stuff's on a sticker and mine is not. You know what I mean? And so we're always discounting our value and our worth and our giftings. And so your elevator pitch is, no, let me remind you of what it is.
Yeah.
Whatever that is. And then that opens it right up to anybody, because that's something that's in our heart is all of us are wondering, do I matter? Am I important? Am I doing this right?
Wow. We just had a revelation together.
My goodness. I love
it. Oh my gosh. We keep friends forever.
Okay. So we are really out of time, but I wanted to ask you, the self-care I love is your daily move and you have a hashtag in it.
Yeah. Daily five.
Is that it?
Yep. The five things that I do. For me, it's like a vitamin. The daily five is eat, sleep, move, pray, create. It's the five things I have to do every day. It just is part of my structure. I need structure in my day. And I start off with pray. I know it doesn't work for everyone early morning, but I feel like if I give God the first part of my day every day, He will make time for me to get done what I need to get done. Because the days that I don't do that, I am again a whirling dervish and I'm just like a pinball all over the place. So I pray.
Can you explain to me for someone who's like, oh, that sounds really great? Because you said, I really pray a lot. We all would like to think we do, or we all wish we did, but not a lot of people say, I actually do. So
yeah.
What does that look like for you? Do you have like a sequence of events you go through, or?
Well, and here's the thing about me. I am a terrible out loud prayer because I babble. Just like I talk to you right now, this is the same way I pray. And for a long time, I thought I had to be like, dear God in heaven. You know, I thought I had to be this like beautiful, poetic prayer. And I thought, nope, that's not me. So that was another thing someone told me is just talk to him. Just talk to him like you're talking to Emily. Just so I have a prayer journal. I have a binder that I write things in. Most of it is like head down, eyes closed, praying just for, I don't want to say general safety, but you know, I pray for my husband to get to work safely, safely on the job, and pray for my kids. And, you know, I have all my basic ABC prayers, but then when people ask me to pray, that's one thing is on social media with praying, like people will reach out and ask for prayers and then you respond, I'm on it, or praying. But how often do we really ever stop and do that? We might say, oh, Emily, I'm praying for you. But do I really stop? And it takes 2 seconds to just say, I'll be with Emily for a minute. So that's what it looks like. It's start and stop all day long. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can do it wherever you are. And no one needs to know. It's not about what people know. It's between you and God. It's a completely personal relationship.
Okay.
So I write it down, I say it in my head, but I do start every day that way.
Yeah. What do you think is your kind of block about praying out loud?
Because I jumble my words.
Okay, so you just feel like it's not gonna...
Yeah, I flop all over the place. And I remember once, I think this was the turning point, we were doing a big women's ministry thing at church, and it was before it started and all of the leaders got together. And one of these ladies that I really respect, I love her, she started out and she either said frickin' or flippin' during a prayer. And I started to laugh out loud. I was like, Okay, that's what I would do. Like, yeah. And it's okay. Like, just flipping, let this work, you know? Yeah. And I'm thinking, you just said flipping to God. Like, you can't say that. And yeah. I felt like, but that would be me. I would yeah. do that.
And you loved it, right?
I did.
And so why is it not the same for you? I'm asking because I also feel very uncomfortable praying out loud. And so I really try to make myself on a regular basis.
Just feel dorky. I mean, I'm just a weirdo in a good way. And so I would truly, if I mean, it's not that I don't, because if people, I have said no before. I think when I was in Italy this last time, I'm like, to my friend Emily, I'm like, how about if Emily does it? And I thought, I can't do that. If someone asks me, Stephanie, will you pray for us? I like choke up.
Okay.
But I have to learn to just be me, show yeah. up. God knows the way I am, and just yeah. do it. Because me being me might give permission for you to be you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. And because I always think, oh my gosh, but then I have these friends who are like, it's all Bible verses. And yes. that's so good. And I know the same ones, but it is so loud in my head thinking, oh, you're not going to say this right, or they're going to think you're weird. I know God doesn't think I'm weird, but I can't close out all the other people that are listening yeah. well enough to actually pray, you know? So I don't know. I would just encourage us both to get over it. And
it takes practice. Shot. So we have to just practice doing it.
We do. Okay. So we are out of time, but I want to ask you, what can you not stop talking about right now?
Oh gosh. Well, Game of Thrones, because...
Tell me, I don't know anything.
Yeah, we have to wait 2 years for another season because that's the way it happens. And so we're kind of bummed about that because that's what we did on Saturday night. I okay. love football.
Okay.
So I love football season. It means it's fall. I can't tell you one thing about the game of football, but okay. I love the sound of it. I love to have it on the TV. I create well with it on.
Really?
Yes, I love everything about football season. And during football season, on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, I don't know what to do with myself because there's no games on. It's just weird. And then I get kind of sad when it's over. Like, now what am I supposed to do? So I just love it. And I will go cheer for any team. I don't have a team. I don't have a player. I'm like, who needs a win? I'm just the ultimate team mom.
You are. I love that.
I cried in the drive-thru of Del Taco the first game of this season. We don't have a football player anymore because Ben played football. So for every Friday night for 5 years, we went to football games. And the first game of this season, we were in the drive-thru of Del Taco and John's like, what's the matter? I'm like, nothing. He's like, I can tell something's the matter. What's the matter? I'm like, we don't have a player and we don't have a game to go watch.
Oh, that's so sad.
So I just cheer on. But yeah, I love football.
I love it. All right, Stephanie, it's been so fun to talk to you. I can't wait to share you with everybody.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you for welcoming me into your closet.
Oh, you're so welcome. So good. There's so many good takeaways from that. The flu plague has descended on our home, so I'm going to make this quick. So ladies, if your marriage is in trouble, or it could be better, which is all of us, my church wrote a fantastic curriculum called Re-Engage, and it's been adopted by churches all over the country. To find out if it's in your area, you can go to marriagehelp.org. It was the first thing that my husband and I did when we moved to Dallas 6 years ago. Our marriage was fine, but it really did make it better. Maybe you have a child with a severe fear about something and you want to push them in the right direction. I think a lot of us have the fear that making them do something they are really afraid to do would traumatize them and ruin them for life. But at least in Stephanie's case, it was the push that she needed to get on that camp bus. Certainly be prayerful and seek guidance, but know that your kids are going to push back against things even if it's healthy for them. We do the same thing. So don't take that as proof that you're doing the wrong thing. I know for my daughter, when she would be about to lose teeth, she would stop eating and stop drinking and stop talking just because she was trying to hold that tooth in place and she wouldn't even let me get near her. And so it got to the point where I had to like hold her down and pull her tooth out, but it's because she was ceasing to do things that people who are alive do just because of the fear of the teeth coming out. And then of course, it doesn't even hurt. So anyway, just know that if you're facing something like that, it's regular. Sometimes you gotta sit on your kids and pull their teeth out. Incidentally, I also had to sit on her to clip her nails, and her nails grow very fast. So I sat on that kid a lot. A lot. Maybe this week you need to take Stephanie's advice and embrace your own kind of creativity and not try so hard to copy someone else's. That can be really hard, and copying is a great way to learn. But I know from having an Etsy shop, it really is pretty junky when people like rip off what you've done. Maybe you struggle well this week by ordering Stephanie's new book that I did not even know that she had at the time of this interview. Mine is coming in the mail soon and I cannot wait to get it. You can find the link to purchase it in my show notes at momstrugglingwell.com/podcast. It's so funny that we talked about praying out loud. We recorded this in the summer and how much I didn't do it. If you'll notice though, 6 months later, I do it at the end of every episode. I do it at church all the time. I'm not sure what shifted, but something shifted. And it's fun to be able to see growth in yourself. So maybe this week you try the thing you've always said that you couldn't do, and you probably won't die. Remember, ladies, if you use the show's affiliate link each time you shop at Amazon, it really helps with the costs of making the show. Go to momstrugglingwell.com/Amazon, and it'll take you to Amazon. Doesn't cost you anything extra. I would love to stay connected throughout this week. I am the best at Instagram. Well, I mean, I'm not saying I'm better than you at Instagram. I'm saying of all the things on social media, I am the best at Instagram. But you can find me in all the places at Mom Struggling Well. And you don't want to miss Struggle Well Wednesday. There's one that happens on Instagram on Wednesday night and in the closed Facebook group as well. Those ladies are hilarious and they are struggling through some kooky stuff. So it will make you feel normal and it will make you realize your day was not so bad. Let me pray for us. Lord, I love so much of what Stephanie said about how our purpose is right in front of us. And I think as moms, sometimes we know our purpose is all the gross parts about being a mom, and that's fine. But when we think that's all our purpose is when we kind of start looking at the front door and wondering if we could sneak out without being noticed. Sometimes it's so easy to spot someone else's purpose, but it's really hard to see it in ourselves. And so I pray this week that you would help these moms to see the bigger picture, to see where they add value. And Lord, would you help us see how much value we add to our own families? It's a beating to just be pouring out our hearts every day to the same little tiny jokers who don't seem to care. And they do care. And we're not asking for a thank you. It's just we have to die to ourselves a lot. And I know you know that. And I know you love moms. And I know you were more mistreated and more discounted than we ever will be. But this week, Lord, I pray for an extra measure of encouragement for the moms listening. And Lord, wherever they are on the spectrum of knowing you, I pray that you'd bring them one step closer this week to seeing how good you are and how much you love them. In Jesus' name, amen.